My dad was a humble man, and he indeed loved to poke fun at himself from time to time. So he had a story that he liked to tell, but I was actually a witness to it. You see, he was a longtime pastor in a Presbyterian church where I grew up in Warwick, Rhode Island. And while he served in that church, the presbytery would call upon him from time to time to please go out and visit congregations as they were going into transition so that he could bring the strength of the community to them and help them to know that they weren't alone. And he enjoyed that task, and he would take me along as a young lad so that I could see another place and be present with him. And I think actually it was so that I wouldn't be bothering my mother while he was out preaching in another place. But that's another story for another day. But he got to one congregation that he had never been in before, and in the front, as was the case in many Presbyterian churches, there was a communion rail that went all the way across. And this one was unique in that it had a hidden entryway to the chancel. You couldn't necessarily see it all that clearly. And so he came up in his robe at the time of the sermon, and he was bending down, and he was trying to wiggle the catch and see if he could get the thing open, and he couldn't do it. So he finally hauled up his robe, and he stepped over the rail with one foot, and then stepped over the rail with the other foot, and then kind of let his robe fall, and a titter went through the congregation at this point. It didn't become problematic until he got to the portion of the worship service when he was to read the scripture. And he intoned, "Very truly, I tell you, anyone who does not enter the sheepfold by the gate, but climbs in by another way, is a thief and a bandit." Both he and the congregation totally lost it at that moment. But they invited him back because they had bonded over that moment. There is a lot of talk about sheep and shepherds in our scriptures. In fact, it looks like there are about 125 times that they're discussed in the scriptures. They come up a lot. And perhaps the most meaningful passage, or the one that holds us most closely, is the Psalm of David, the 23rd Psalm that we read as part of our assurance of grace this morning. "The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want." It's probably sitting right there in your memory bank. It's a wonderful psalm. It has with it an interesting structure if you've never taken a good look at it. But in the opening, David uses the psalm to teach. He lets others know that God is my shepherd and that I shall not want, that God makes me lie down in green pastures and leads me beside still waters, restoring my soul. But then there's a shift in the psalm from the didactic to the personal, as he says, addressing God directly, "Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I fear no evil, for you are with me." You, no longer talking about the distant God, but you, O great shepherd, are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. And when I get in trouble, there you are. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil, and my cup overflows. It's a beautiful, beautiful, and personal image. It's an image of intentional shepherd. Now, had we had some young people to talk about this here, I would have talked about the physiology of the sheep. Why is it that still waters are so important to the sheep? Well, as it happens, if you look at where the nose of our sheepy friend here is, and you have a picture up there, you got it. And you see where our sheepy friend's mouth is, they are located pretty closely. And in some breeds, the nose protrudes farther ahead of the mouth. And so if you are a sheep and you're trying to drink in rushing waters, the likelihood is you're going to inhale it. And that is not a good thing. And it would tend to disorient the sheep, and the sheep might well fall into that rushing water. And when a sheep is in rushing water, the wool, which is so warm when it's dry, gets wet and heavy and drags the sheep under. So still waters isn't just a beautiful pastoral image. It's life and death. It's serious work. And so an intentional shepherd knows where to lead the sheep to find the still waters so that they can be nourished and be cared for. So the idea of an intentional shepherd is what is clear to David in his psalm. I don't know if you've ever seen shepherds at work. The sheep really do know the voice. They really do know the voice of their shepherd. In fact, I've seen videos of shepherds bringing their sheep together into a giant flock to field, in a field to feed. And at the end of their time together, as it is time to go on, the sheep just simply call their sheep. They ring their bell and they call their sheep and they self-select back to their own shepherds. They know the shepherd's voice. So what a beautiful image that David gives us of us knowing the voice. And Jesus piles on with that as Jesus is our intentional shepherd. As he says, "My sheep know my voice. And so they follow me." And if you haven't figured that out, it's because you haven't figured out that you're not in my fold. And so he said to those who were after him and trying to trick him, was to say, "You know who I am. I am the shepherd of the sheep." Now, it was true for Jesus' day, but it's true for us that there is an important element of intentionality in a shepherd, especially during a period of intentional interim. For you as a congregation, that's where you're headed next, into a time of intentional interim. And before we go there, I think it's important for you to understand where you're going and why. What's it about? Well, gee, can't we, just get onto one of those job sites on the internet and post our posting and get somebody in here in a couple of weeks, and then we're all good to go, and, we got our pulpit filled, and no fuss, no muss. But if we do that, we squander a gift and an opportunity that is really important to you as a congregation. Because there's an intentionality about an interim process. that involves the church to be as intentional as the pastor in helping you through a path that will lead you most clearly to the shepherd's voice. So, interim ministers are trained in five developmental tasks that happen during the interim time. Now, where this comes from is from some work by Lauren Mead, the head of the Alban Institute, which is a remarkably strong church support organization that's been helping churches for years in transition and conflict and all kinds of leadership training and all kinds of ways supporting churches. But he wrote a monograph and then a book on a change in pastors and ways that churches can best make use of an interim time to support its work in creative and life-giving ways. And he came up with a description after interviewing many, many congregations when they had had successful changes of pastors and when they had less successful changes in pastors. And he wanted to know why. Why was there a difference? And what he came up with was the fact that the churches that were successful in their transition did five things pretty much consistently. And he wrote those up as developmental tasks. The first is coming to terms with history. Now, I need to tell you that while we have not been explicit about it, during the period of time that I've been serving with you, you actually have been working on many of these tasks at some level. We're kind of turning the soil. There's some planting to be done, but the soil has been turned ahead. And so when I talk about coming to terms with history, you may recall that we as a congregation offered a number of forums between services, three or four of them that we did, concluded it last week. And during that time, we talked about the history of the transition that you most recently went through. It's important for you to know the history of where you have been and where you are going. And in that is one piece of the history, but that's only recent. Who are you as a people, and what is your history? How did you become the Rincon Church? It's important to look at what were the wonderful, high, important moments in the life of ministry in this congregation, and even to look at the times of struggle. And what was it that we can learn from those times? We learn a lot when we do some reflection on who we are and how we got to be who we are. So an intentional interim will help you with coming to terms with your history by working with you on oral histories, by sharing out exercises and ways that you might be able to get in touch yourselves with the history. And not just the history of this congregation, but your individual faith histories. Because a church is different whenever one member changes. With the addition of one member, it's not the same group anymore. So what is it that we bring? What is it that we bring to our journey, and how does that carry us forward? So during a time of intentional interim, there will be some opportunities to come to terms with history. The second thing that Lauren discovered was that churches that were most successful in interim spent time discovering a new identity. Who is it that God is inviting us to become? Informed by our history, what's our identity now? Now, you've heard me talk about knowing your why. Knowing your why. Why are you this church? And when you know your why, when you know why you're doing things, when you know why you're running a shelter, you know why you're out helping the poor, you know why you have a program of hospitality, when all those things are clear to you, then the what can follow quite easily. What is next? What is the next invitation that God is giving us as we're called to be a new phase in our life as a community. So it's a task of developing a vision to which the church is being called. Now, I have said before, and I will repeat it again, that of the multitude of churches that I have worked with in transition in my ministerial career, you are in the high, high percentage list of folks who know why they are about what they are about. So you have a really good head start on that identity. But what's the next destination? That is the opportunity that you find when you discover a new identity. And then in most congregations over a period of time, there is a tendency among leadership to form in a specific way, usually related to your pastoral leadership. So during a time of transition, there often are shifts of power or leadership changes within the church. The reason is pretty clear, actually, because we adapt to the leadership style of the person who leads us, and we learn how to work with that person. And some people step up because they're very comfortable in that particular style. Other people may step back. And as a different person comes in to lead you, there is an opportunity in that moment to be intentional about taking leadership within the church. So some people may say, I've done this for a long time and I'm going to step back. And other people may say, it's time for me to step up. It's time for me to step up and find a different way. And that's an exciting thing. And it's an exciting moment. And how might we do that? So there is an opportunity in interim time. Now that we have discovered our identity, which is based on our understanding of our history, to empower those who might want to step into leadership roles, to teach them, and to be able to join together in a new mission. The fourth thing that churches who made particularly successful transitions did was rethinking their denominational linkages. Now, there are great resources available to you in the denomination, and in particular in the Southwest Conference. And so the Southwest Conference will be deeply involved with you in your process by training the folks who will be your search team, by providing you with profiles of candidates in the search process, by being a resource to you and to your leaders in terms of training or other opportunities that are there. And within the conference, as it's defined as the member churches, there is great community and support that can be found from your sister churches in the area. So our denominational linkages come to the fore a lot during the interim time. And it's a time for us to realize that while we have been a strong support to other congregations, there is this time when the denomination can be a support to us in our time of transition into moving to new leadership. And finally, in the fifth developmental task comes toward the end of the interim process, and that's where we make a commitment to new leadership and to a new future. That's when you figure out, how is it that with this leader that we now know who has come and is present with us, how is it that we can best connect? How can we be instrumental in making sure that our leader is well-rooted into the community, understands who we are and what our needs are? Some of that happens in the interview process, but much more happens in face-to-face interaction with you as a church. So there is an opportunity through this whole process to be intentional and shape the way the church moves into its chosen future. So the biggest risk to a congregation is to sit it out, to just simply sit back and say, oh, we don't have to be involved in this time. We'll wait until the new pastor is called. And to do that is to miss a sterling opportunity for you to be an intentional community. Just as we have an intentional shepherd, just as we have an intentional interim, so we can be an intentional community as we shape the ministry for the future and call the person who is absolutely the right person to work with us as we envision our new future. So as you engage in this process, I want you to know that I'm taking a piece of Rincon Church with me. Because in my heart, and in my spirit, and in my prayers, are each one of you as you engage in this process. Please don't shortchange yourself. Dig in. Be a part of it. It's the most exciting time in the life of church, of the church. And I pray that it might be so. Amen.